welcoming in our friend Sean McAdam of MassLive.com. Sean, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Rich. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. How are you?
Couldn't be better.
Glad to hear that. Nice win for the Red Sox last night. It has been a rough couple of weeks for the Red Sox, and boy, not many of these moves by Chaim Bloom have worked out, but it sure looks like the investment in James Paxton and the patience they showed is going to turn out to be a good thing. He looks every bit as good as he did before his injuries.
Yeah, he has completely surpassed my expectations. And as you kind of hinted at, there was no guarantee that they were going to get him on the mound at any point. Last year was known to be a year that was going to be mostly lost to rehab from Tommy John. But the hope was maybe they'd get something in the final month. Then he had a lat injury and a setback in late August that torpedoed that. And then in spring training, further set himself back with a hamstring. And it was like, you know, one thing after another. Is he ever going to be able to give the Red Sox anything for their money here? And boy, over the last five outings, I would say he has. He's been their best starter probably in that stretch. Four of those five starts, he's allowed two runs or fewer. So, and to be able to go seven innings last night, take them deep after they had used up the bullpen quite a bit over the weekend, that was huge as well. So, yeah, there aren't a lot of necessarily positive developments with the pitching staff this year, but certainly Paxton's one of them.
Do we know any more about Chris Sale's injury and a likely timeline for him?
We don't. I heard Alex Cora ask earlier today if he had any additional info, and he said no, it would probably be another couple of days. I don't know how to explain this slow trickle of developments here with Sale, other than to note that in the past, since he's been in Boston, Sale has been very discerning when it comes to releasing information about his physical condition and injuries. And players have that right. So whether he has asked that they not release stuff or release stuff right away, I'm not sure. I probably shouldn't speculate there. I'm just going on, if past is prologue, then he has expressed some reluctance to offer much detail about his injuries in the past, whether that's a factor here or not. But it is strange, given the access that the Red Sox have to, you know, MRI and CT scans and X-ray machines and everything else, that it would take this long to get some sort of definitive diagnosis.
So Cutter Crawford goes tonight. Is he the guy, at least for the short term, to fill out that rotation?
Yeah, I think so. They're in the process of getting him stretched out because, of course, after he made a couple of starts early in the year, he got moved back into that bullpen role and was going to be asked to contribute at a multi-inning level, which he was starting to do. But, you know, it's the difference between that and going out and starting a game. So I think that he gave them three innings last time out. So the hope is four, maybe five tonight, at which point you would expect he would be pretty much built up and, you know, in the next one or two starts or however long he has to take Sale's spot, that they can expect a little bit more length from him, but he'll be managed pretty carefully until he gets there. But he has pitched pretty well this season, and it speaks volumes, I guess, that they chose him over two guys who were also in the rotation earlier in the year and met with mixed results. That would be Pivetta and Kluber. The fact that Crawford is being plugged into this empty spot suggests that, you know, they think he might be able to really help.
We're talking with Sean McAdam here on Downtown. Part of the problem for the Red Sox, especially in their recent skid, but really all season long, has been their defensive lapses. Kike Hernandez doesn't seem to be the answer at shortstop, but as of right now, there aren't a whole lot of solutions. I was a bit surprised at the move in designating Tapia for assignment. What does that mean going forward, especially with Adam Duvall scheduled to return on Friday?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's a good point, Rich, because if that was a tough decision to make, then Friday's is going to be even more difficult. I'm not sure how they get around that, because they clearly need somebody like Pablo Lopez around as Hernandez struggles at short. I think for the time being, they prefer having Hernandez in the outfield against left-handed pitching, sitting Duran and having Lopez play short, but trying to figure out how they're going to get Duvall on the roster is a tough one. I mean, they've got essentially four extra players now. That would be, let's call it Reese McGuire, because Wong has sort of established himself as the starting catcher, or at least he's getting more playing time than McGuire. So you got McGuire as one, Lopez as two. You also have Ref Snyder as an extra guy in the outfield. And, you know, somewhere along the way, and you've got either Arroyo or Valdez. Mm. I guess Valdez is probably the guy who's most vulnerable as we go through it. But the fact is that with Hernandez able to go out and contribute in the outfield, you could get away with having only the other four outfielders, that is Yoshida, Duran, Verdugo, and Ref Snyder, knowing that Hernandez can go out there and be the fifth guy. But Tapia had done everything they had asked of him, a lefty bat, a pretty good pinch hitter off the bench, and a decent base runner that they used to pinch run and who stole six bases in seven tries. I would have thought that maybe Valdez would have been the odd man out then, but I think eventually Tapia was going to come up against it. It's just that he went first because they have the ability, as I said, to shift Hernandez out there.
And they've been very adamant about sticking with Tristan Casas despite his struggles offensively. We've seen some nice swings from him in the last games. Is it possible that he's coming out of this season-long slump?
Yeah, certainly last night was encouraging for him. He drove the ball hard and well in two of his at-bats. You know, the thing for him that strikes me as unexpected is that you're not surprised, I don't think, when a rookie has some difficulty adjusting to big league pitching. Very few guys hit the ground running and have immediate success, even the best prospects in the game. And, you know, certainly Casas was well thought of as he came up through the system. But the thing that surprised me is, you know, the strike zone judgment and the command of the strike zone, which was always seen as a strength of his. I think for a time, he was too passive and not aggressive enough.
Mm.
And then to sort of overcompensate, became too aggressive and was swinging early in the count and getting himself out by chasing a little bit. So it seems in recent days, he's a little bit back to where he should be and not being overly aggressive or too cautious. So if that is the case and he's making better swing decisions, then it's a little easier to evaluate him on his swing and less so about when he's decided to swing and when not to.
Of course, another player who is going to be coming back sometime soon, probably within the next month or so, is Trevor Story. Now, I've seen some speculation that maybe he would come back and serve as a DH before he's ready to play the field, but that doesn't seem to make a lot of sense to me.
No, I think they may do that, you know, maybe a week before he's able to get cleared to play for shortstop, and you could use him as a DH option. But I think they want him to come back as the everyday shortstop. That was the plan before the surgery was revealed to be necessary in early January, and it's still the plan. And if anything, it's more of the plan, given the struggles they've had at that position. You referenced Kike Hernandez leading all of baseball in errors there. Yu Chang was a decent backup defensively, but then he got hurt. He's rehabbing. I would expect he'll be back in another week or so, and that would be somebody that they would prefer over Lopez, I believe. But shortstop has been a real issue, and I'm sure they can't wait for Story to fill that, but I think they're going to have to wait until at least after the All-Star break before that happens. I would expect that he's more than a month away when he hasn't really been fully cleared to do everything yet, and he'll need certainly a couple of weeks of rehab.
Rafael Devers has been struggling mightily, very little production over the course of the last couple of weeks. Is this a situation of him putting too much pressure on himself after the big contract? Is it a lack of protection in the lineup, or is it many things contributing?
Yeah, maybe a couple of those things, Rich. I would say not necessarily trying to earn or live up to the contract, but maybe to do too much. I think the offense has slipped a little bit here in the last couple of weeks, and maybe Devers feels that he's got to do everything. He's the guy that everybody is waiting for to carry the offense. So probably jumping at pitches that he ordinarily wouldn't, and as you referenced, trying a little too hard. I think there's also been the suggestion that he's dealing with a couple of things physically and is banged up, and that probably hasn't helped him or his swing at the plate.
Boy, and when you talk about the Chaim Bloom successes, it didn't look this way early on, but boy, Yoshida is just a professional hitter.
Yeah, he's been terrific offensively, less so in the outfield, but that kind of was expected. Not a lot of range or athleticism out there. He'll catch what he gets to, and it looks like that's not a whole lot, really. I mean, he can make the routine play, but you're right. Offensively, he's been dynamic. He's gotten on base. He's used the whole field. He's shown power on occasion, I think more than some people expected to see translate over here. But yeah, when you look at a guy that got an OPS of up near 900 and a batting average among the league leaders at 330 or so, he's doing something right. And credit to him for making that transition so quickly here. It's not just, you know, coming over and playing at a different league. It's language, it's culture, it's travel, it's food, it's the size of the baseball. It's the schedule that he now plays. It's the facilities in which he plays. It's everything is different. And when he had that stretch, maybe not the first 10 days, but the second or third week of the season where he's rolling over on a lot of balls and popping things up, the fact that he could correct that pretty quickly, given all he's trying to deal with, is pretty darn impressive.
Sean, a terrific piece on former Red Sox manager Terry Francona, going through some struggles of his own with this Cleveland team that's also underperforming a bit. The boos were raining down on the bullpen last night, but Francona's always been an upfront guy, and as he said in your piece, it was time for him to end his tenure in Boston.
Yeah, we had him on our podcast, if I can blatantly promote that, Fenway Rundown at MassLive.com. You can get that wherever you get your podcast. And Terry was our guest this week. And yeah, we asked him to, you know, it's been a dozen years now, which seems kind of incredible that it was that long ago, but the end of the 2011 season. And as you noted, Rich, Terry has always been one who does not have a big ego. He can assess things. He's not afraid to take responsibility or blame. And as he looks back on it with the benefit of hindsight and some time, as he told us, you know, after a while, some of the things you're trying to communicate don't resonate as much. And I you know, 8 years in Boston, he always jokes, he judges his time in Boston as ones that have to be measured in dog years, because it's different than managing in Cleveland as he is now, or Milwaukee or Kansas City or Pittsburgh or other markets. You get, you know, chewed up and spit out pretty quickly here. And he lasted 8 years and did a lot of winning. But as he acknowledged, you know, between the way things ended in that final disastrous 2011 season and just some things he was dealing with and the difficulty he had maybe in guys starting to tune him out, that, you know, the time had come to an end. He took a year off, and he's now spent 11 seasons in Cleveland, three more than he has than he did in Boston, and he's continued to be successful and remains a guy that is regarded as one of the best managers in the game.
Sean McAdam, MassLive.com with us. Sean, appreciate it as always. Thanks for checking in with us, and we'll talk to you again in a couple of weeks.
Look forward to it, Rich.